All right, welcome to the first ever LAG Confidential podcast. We know the podcast world is a little cluttered out there, but we're going to try and do something different. I'm going to do more of a statistical approach because, well, we know that there are a lot of stat heads out there, and we are trying to change the way we think about soccer. And we've got two of the best here with me. I'm kind of an idiot, but these guys are great. So I'm going to introduce them. We've got Sean Steffen. You can find him on Twitter at Sean Steffen. Say hello, Sean.
Hello. Hello, world.
And of course, and we also have another LAG confidential editor, Mike Gray, who you can find at Twitter at Mike Gray SC. So say hello, Mike.
How's it going, everybody?
And the three of us are going to not only look at the RSL LA match that was last weekend, but we're going to look forward to the one that is upcoming. I'm just going to spitball, and you guys probably think things went okay, not so okay. How do you think things went in general on Saturday?
I think LA's offense, needless to say, was... it was just terrible. There's no other word for it. I've never seen an LA offense look that bad. I mean, let's just give you some numbers here. LA usually averages 16 shots a game, which is absurdly high to begin with. So they only managed 3 the entire game against RSL. Their expected goals per game is usually 1.85. On Saturday, it was 0.1. So, you know, not a good day.
Well, you know, I gotta admit the Galaxy played poorly, but I do find it a bit strange how pundits and just, you know, the general soccer world were basically treated RSL's scoreless draw as if it was a victory for them. I mean, you know, if you reverse that and, you know, the Galaxy has a scoreless draw, you know, at Home Depot Center, versus Seattle, obviously, I mean... that wouldn't be a good result. But I mean, here's the thing for me, you know, I think about 40% of that game was the wind. I mean,
I got it. But didn't RSL play in the wind too? And they had 16 shots.
Well, that's true. But you know what? I think if you read between the lines, sometimes, you know, with the fans, the thing is, the real game, it's not FIFA. And, you know, when it comes to the wind, you know, that's something that just sounds kind of, you know, like an excuse. And by the way, how come no one mentioned the fact that, you know, just the general idea that when you play in Utah, you have to deal with the altitude? I thought it was weird that no one even brought that up. But, you know, you think about that first of all, and then you add in the fact that, you know, to RSL's credit, I believe that they adapted to the wind conditions far better than the Galaxy. I mean, look, I've been up there in Utah, and it's freezing. I mean, it's a different climate. I mean, that wind, I'm not saying that wind happens every game, but it happens enough that RSL knows how to deal with it. I mean, you saw what they did in the first half. They basically played a super high line. And, you know, even Nat Borchers said after the game that it was basically like having a second defender or an extra defender in the first half. But in the second half, you know, RSL was smart enough to say, hey, you know, we're playing we're playing into the wind. So, you know, let's just get Joao Plata, make sure he's on the left, and then we'll go ahead and load the box and then cross the ball in. And as you saw, they were fairly successful scraping out half chances and, you know, some very serious chances in the game later on. But that, to me, just points to what Sean was saying, which is that, you know, or might say later, which is that, you know, Bruce did not adjust.
Absolutely. And it's not like you couldn't predict it. That's RSL soccer. You overload one side, you swing it back, and up, you're out of position. That's what RSL does. That's what they've been doing for 3-4 years now. So it's not like we went in there, it's like, oh, they've changed it up. No, that's what they always do. So we should have been prepared for that. But I think tactically, I think what RSL did incredibly well, probably one of the best examples I've seen of it in MLS in a very long time, was they moved incredibly well as a defensive unit and did a good job collectively maintaining constant pressure on the ball. It forced the Galaxy to make passing decisions faster, and it ended up causing a lot of errors. Because, you know, LA's attack works. They like to swing the ball sideways. They go left to right, and they use Sarvis and Juninho as the central hubs, and they go sideways in order to go forward. And RSL just shut that down. As soon as the ball would go sideways, RSL would shift to that side and completely smother whoever was on the ball. So we saw a lot of north-south running from Donovan and Rodgers because they just couldn't get it back in. And, like, I think the best example came on that left side. You know, you had Mulholland, Beltran, and, you know, even Plata, where just they would all converge on Donovan or Rodgers, whoever had the ball, and they just couldn't find an outlet. And, you know, every time, so even if it was Rodgers, with Rodgers back, when Rodgers was approaching the center line, Sarvice would look to reset the play. He hits it back to Rodgers. Plata comes in, you know, I mean, it's this collective defending. Plata runs back, applies the pressure. There really was no safe area for the Galaxy to just reset the ball. It was just constant pressure. And they were already rattled with the wind. It really amplified it. They could not get into rhythm. And I think so much of Galaxy soccer is rhythm. So it rattled them. They just could not run their offense.
Yeah, there's no doubt that RSL was a well-oiled machine in the first half. I mean, like you said, their shape is just so excellent. I mean, you have Winger pushing up the left and just, you know, overloading the left channel. Joao Plata in the first half, you know, haranguing Omar every time that he got the chance.
Oh, that matchup is my nightmare. Omar on Plata. And you know, Plata knows, you know, I'm not going on AJ, I'm going on Omar, because that's where I'm going to find my goals. So that's what I'm dreading next, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that's what I'm dreading next game.
Yeah, and, you know, Javier Morales, you know, typically in the playoffs, you know, he tends to step it up a notch in terms of his defensive responsibilities, but he was all over the place. And, you know, they were, the RSL players just move in perfect synchronization. And, you know, the Galaxy, they were okay in the first half, but, you know, they were struggling with the conditions.
Were they?
And, well, I'm being nice.
They created two chances in the first half.
Well, all right. Speaking of which, you know, if I'm being honest, I thought Keane had a rather poor game. I don't know. You go back to the beginning of the game. I remember that shot he had outside the 18 where he hits it right at Raimondo. And no one mentions this, but Kazi Zardes, you know, his movement has been, you know, he's gotten better throughout the season, but, you know, the card's been, you know, generally that he's still a bit raw. But on that play, he makes a perfect run. And if Keane just plays it to him, he's one-on-one with Raimondo. And, you know, the thing is, it was for Zardes that he makes that exact same run on the play that they ended up scoring that goal that was offside. So, I mean, it's strange to see Keane not perform.
It is.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The Galaxy offense definitely has some kinks that needs to be worked out. But at the same time, you know, when I was watching the replay of the game, there were a lot of half chances that, you know, the Galaxy had, and every single time they just got shut down. Now, part of that is due to the fact that RSL's defense was just amazing, but you know, the fact remains that Keane, you know, has some work to do. But I'm actually quite optimistic, because if there's one thing we know about Robbie Keane, if he goes any more than two games, I won't even say three, so the fact that he's gone three is scary, but three games without scoring and just making mistakes, that's not Robbie Keane.
Well, let's bring this to a question, and this, you know, this is some sort of speculation here, but he was injured, supposedly, for that last game of the season. Maybe
that's
he's not 100%, and maybe they're not going to say that, but maybe he's not 100%. Maybe that's what no one wants to talk about, because, like you said, Keane was not in form, and Keane is, like, there are plenty of possession teams in MLS, I mean, to be honest. What makes the Galaxy different from the Crew, you know, different from Philadelphia, different from even RSL, is that they have someone in the final third that can be precise, and that when Keane and Donovan work together, they can work combinations, and no one creates as many, none of the possession teams create nearly as many chances as LA does. And when you look at the numbers in the final third, they're atrocious for this game. Landon had only had 34 passes the entire game. Keen only had 23. They created zero chances total. And together, all season, those two made up 40% of chance creation. So that's 40% of the offense gone when they don't perform. That's massive. So I think, that's pretty much it right there. RSL, you know, or RSL either managed to shut them down or they sort of shut themselves down. And Keane has not looked sharp. I would agree with you.
Now, Bruce Arena took a long time in that match to make really any sort of change. Would either of you argue that he took too long before making some sort of adjustments?
Oh, God, yes. This is one of those games where I was just banging my head on the table. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw me, you know, ranting as is normal during games that, look, like, anyone and their mother watching this game could tell 30 minutes in, 40 minutes in, that LA was not creating chances in the final third and that the only chances they were getting were on the counter. And, you know, not to rag on Jossie, but he does not read the game fast enough to be good at, on the counter. And yes, he's got the speed, but counter is more than speed. It's about quickness of thought, and he just doesn't have it. And Donovan does. So, and you don't need a sub to do it. That's the thing. Why not shift? You know, next, if there's an injury, if there's a whistle, stoppage in play, first half, why can't Bruce relay? Zardes, Donovan, start switching it up. I want to see Donovan more up top. Because as soon as he did do it, and he did it very late in the second half, as soon as he did it, the Galaxy were immediately dangerous. And they created some chances on the break. So, if I could see it, you know, why can't Bruce? And clearly he could see it because he did make the change. Why didn't the change come earlier? That just, it infuriated me.
You know, speaking of Bruce, as much as I want to fault him, you know, I think he might have been happy with the general shape of the team. I mean, you know, I was looking at the offensive stats for RSL, and even though, you know, as a Galaxy fan, you're probably biting your nails the whole second half. I mean, like, only 9 of the 17 shots that they had were from open play. Mm-hmm. And then of those, only two-thirds were outside the box. So
I can supplement that a bit. RSL recorded of the, yes, 16 shots sounds, you know, scary. It was only the expected goals numbers for their shots, 1.1. And according to my friends at American Soccer Analysis, usually a 16-shot performance from a team is normally 1.6, 1.7. So Galaxy defense did a great job of keeping them out of the danger zone, as we like to say.
Danger zone!
Would you happen to know the Galaxy expected goals in that match?
Oh, I would. It's. Do you want to know it? It hurts.
I'm ready for the pain.
0.1.
I'm sitting down.
A tenth of a goal. That's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, the tenth of a goal. And honestly, I don't know who was going to score that tenth of a goal.
It's really good, but... but a little too good, actually. It's on my nerves.
At the same time, though, LA, I mean, RSL did an amazing job defensively. You know, we've all said it. But at the same time, this is not something the Galaxy can't overcome. And that's what's kind of frustrating about it, that if the ball movement's faster, you know, because they were doing it because they were shifting so much. They were shifting to the wings. The ball movement's faster, and you have more precise cross-field switches, and or you would transition the attack faster, RSL wouldn't have the time to get those numbers behind the ball. And there's a specific play that I think should embody what they have to do next game. And it's around, if you watch the build-up around the 30th minute, LA completely unlocks RSL's defense with a quick 1-2 between Zardes and Juninho on the right side. And then when it gets back to Juninho, he hits this perfect switch to Donovan, who is sitting in open space on top of the box. And since RSL shifted already to the right, or to their left, Donovan, or it's Beltran. It's not a center back. It's Beltran who's on Donovan. And Keane, being Keane, he sees it like that. So what he does is he peels around him on Donovan's left. So now Donovan has that through ball to make on the left. or if Beltran follows them, Donovan's got a shot on goal. Now Donovan kind of like muffs it a bit, like he takes too many touches. He allows Mulholland to recover, and then once Mulholland gets in front of Donovan, then Beltran is able to get on Keane, and then he has a so Donovan in the end it's a block shot on goal. But that's exactly the type of thing that we expect to see from the Galaxy, and we've seen all season. The Galaxy are capable of, you know, punishing teams for doing what RSL is doing. You know, if they can switch the field like that. We saw that against Seattle. In Seattle, the first game, the one when we completely destroyed Seattle. You know, there's that play where they were completely overloaded defensively on Donovan, and Donovan just switched the field to Ishizaki, and, you know, Ishizaki comes in, no one marking him, scores that goal. I mean, LA can do this. They were playing sloppy. It's not just RSL, you know, performed amazingly on defense. LA was sloppy. At the end of the day, LA has to do better, and they can.
Do I get to complain about Savio Petrescu yet?
Sure.
Because, you know, he's always bothered me as a ref, and then, you know, I felt better when Steve Davis, who's amazing writer, you know, referenced it on Twitter, but said, I don't know, something about how he has hated him since 2008 or something, or thought he was a bad ref. But, you know, he's the type of referee that as a, you know, as a player, you just get so frustrated about. I mean, like, he was just all over the park. He missed a ton of calls. You know, he's handing out soft yellows while letting bad challenges slide. I mean, towards the end of the game, like, here's how bad it was. Like, he called something on Landon, and then we actually saw the holy grail of Landon frustration, which is when he does that sort of 180-degree, like, fist swing, you know, almost like he's throwing a curveball. Like, well, he was mad. And,
we're going to have to gif that. We're going to have to gif that with, like, some Super Saiyan, like, you know, some Super Saiyan energy coming out of him.
But, I mean, and the worst part was, you know, and, you know, while I'm watching the game, I'm getting mad yelling at Juninho for that one tackle that he made on, I think it was Morales or Plata, where he just goes in, like, I wouldn't say studs up, but his studs are definitely showing, and he does this dangerous play. And, you know, what about Schuler? Do you remember the Schuler tackle where he just, you know, all over the place? And it was telling that by the end of the game, both teams were screaming at the guy. I mean, if you're going to make it a playoff game, make it a playoff game. But, like, you know, and the soft yellows were so bad. I mean, the Omar one, Robbie Rogers had a soft yellow. And then,
yeah, I think Martino said on the broadcast, you know, like, you rarely see both teams yelling at a ref at the same time. And that's what was happening. And I always hate talking about the refs, because honestly, if you want complaining about weather and refs, go to Bruce Arena, and nowadays go to Omar, and because they're going to be the ones complaining. And usually I think it doesn't help the Galaxy because they're not learning, because they're just blaming other people. But I think you could argue this is a case where, you know, better reffing could have helped. But at the end of the day, though, three shots, is that really the ref's fault? I don't know.
By the way, Matt Geiger is a DP referee. He's just not paid as well.
Mark Geiger. Oh, man. Did you...
it happens.
Yeah, I mean, Omar's starting to bug me right now, honestly. So Omar puts in an atrocious game, and then he has the balls to, you know, in the locker room and make this snide comment as if he's so pleased with himself and thinks he's so funny about DP referees. It's like, look, you've had terrible last couple of games. You just, you know, screwed us over by getting your second yellow, you know, and could have possibly cost us the shield, and now you're making comments about, you know, referees and all that. I don't see De La Garza doing this. You know, AJ is a stand-up defender, much more consistent than Omar. You don't hear him going to the press about this stuff, and, you know, maybe it's on us, like, the press, because, you know, we're like, oh, we want Omar, whatever, and once we sense that they're giving juicy quotes, we're going to start going, hey, Omar, what'd you think of the ref? So, you know, and in the article, it's not going to say, you know, when asked, it's just going to be his quote. But, I'm starting to get really, really, really angry at Omar for, like, all these snide comments. He just needs to focus on soccer. All right, listeners, time to take a brief interlude. In the meantime, enjoy this soothing royalty-free music.
This game coming up could possibly be Landon's last game. I mean, they're going to take this very seriously. One thing about Landon that I think people don't understand when it comes to his mental state and, you know, his successes and his failures is that Landon does not perform for people. He's not an entertainer.
Yep.
And when you saw that last regular season game, it's not that he played poorly, but, you know, he's a very – when you're a very intelligent person, you know, and you're very, you know, self-conscious and self-aware and you got – you know you have to perform for people, that's different from when you have to perform in a way that there's something on the line and it's just about getting the job done.
Well,
and – by the way, I can trace this all the way back to the 2006 World Cup because that was Landon's World Cup, remember?
Oh, yeah,
that
no, was... you've read my article. I mean, about, yeah, like, Landon's psyche is different from most professional athletes. He just does it for fun. Soccer is fun for him, and that's why he does it. And, you know, he likes that people enjoy his play, but at the end of the day, that's not what it's about for him. So, yeah, I mean, exactly. I would completely agree with you. But at the same time, I don't think Landon does do well, like, under pressure. I mean, it depends on the type of pressure, because all this, you know, like, this pressure that he has to perform, just like in 2006 World Cup, if it's, you know, all about him and all that, it's not necessarily going to be to his advantage. Because he claims that he made the decision to retire before the Seattle game, the one where we went there and won 3-0. And if you look at the season, that's when the season turned around. That was the game where Bruce switched to the wide midfield that completely changed the dynamic of our offense. That was the turnaround game. And that's the game where Donovan started putting up insane numbers, like absolutely insane numbers. So you have to wonder how much of it was formation, how much of it was Donovan, just the burden being lifted, that he was just started playing for fun again. You know, it was, you know, I'm just going to, you know, enjoy every game. But at this point, now there's pressure again. And he hasn't had a good game in a while. I mean, let's be honest. Donovan has not. When was the last time Donovan had a good game?
Okay, I can offer a slight rebuttal for that, which is, now, you're right. Ever since, I believe it was the Seattle game where they squashed the Sounders 3-0, you know, that was the beginning of, like you said, with the wide midfielders, and more specifically, Dan Gargan and Robbie Rogers on the wings.
And Donovan moving from striker, or from first, he started the season at striker, then there was the disaster experiment of putting him at the tip of the diamond, which Bruce took forever to realize was stupid, and then he finally put him out left, and that's when the wide midfield sort of came to be, and that's when we had the Rogers. We finally had Rogers and Donovan working this awesome tandem together, and we had that, or the Top Gun offense, you know?
Oh, yeah. I called it the Top Gun offense for, you know, a bunch of reasons. The fact that, well, I don't know, the article kind of explains it, but, you know, when the Galaxy play a certain formation, and, you know, it starts in the back, because you have Dan Gargan and Robert Rogers, and what they do is, the Galaxy have always been, even though they've always been a very good passing team and they've always, you know, been good in possession, they've always lacked athleticism and pace. That's one reason why they've always struggled against FC Dallas throughout the years. But one thing about, you know, those two in tandem is that they really gave the Galaxy sort of the first whiff of just sort of a modern, you know, defense, because what those do to do in, you know, when they combine and, you know, to be fair, they play slightly different. Gargan kind of, he's always sort of pushing forward, edging forward, looking to take advantage of the space in front of him.
He's the early crosser. He always looks to play the early cross. Rogers, XL, he crosses, but let's be honest, his crossing is terrible. His job is to make people think that his crosses will be dangerous just enough that he'll open a channel for Donovan to play his inverted winger role and then, you know, get in on box where he can feed Zardes or Keen, or Keen to Zardes. So that's really what it's about. And I think, I mean, at times, and I've argued this before, that the reason why I like Baggio on the right these days is that when it was Stefan Ishizaki, Ishizaki pushes so far forward. If you look at, you know, his heat maps, if you look at his positioning, he's almost like a third forward sometimes. And I think Gargan, in the mindset of this Galaxy attack, is when Ishizaki's that far forward, is I have to be overlapping him. And if you're overlapping him that far up, then there's a lot of space behind you, and there's a lot of counter space. And that's something, when the Galaxy, there was the Portland, we saw San Jose, Portland, Columbus, and Colorado all hit the Galaxy, like, in a quick succession of games where the Galaxy were vulnerable to that. And it was on that side, because if Sarvis is pushed up, and then it's just going to be Juninho, and if you have two people, you're gonna pass around Juninho. Gargan and Ishizaki are too slow to get back. Baggio's a third ball winner in the midfield. It sort of balances that. So that's what I've liked. But, I mean, I would agree with you. The wingbacks are so important for the Galaxy in this offense. And Gargan's been an insane find this year. I mean, I voted him Defender of the Year for the Galaxy. And, I mean, it's kind of crazy, but, like, his assists have been tremendous for this team. The space he's opening up for this team is incredible. And we got him for nothing, you know? We got him for nothing. So
he takes up a cool $50,000 on the salary cap.
Oh, man.
Well, and he was supposed to be, like, the third option. Like, he was just the guy they brought in, like, oh, well, I guess we'll see what happens. And then all those injuries all of a sudden leave the Galaxy with Gargan having to contribute. And he's done amazing in what is essentially emergency duty.
Well, I like to tell myself that Bruce was a genius and he foresaw all this and just knew Gargan. You know what's crazy about, you know, the Galaxy? Bruce is very good at taking players that are just sort of, you know, maybe looked at as mediocre, just sort of talents. And they come to the Galaxy and, you know, they join a club that can sort of take advantage of their strengths, and all of a sudden they just move it up a notch. I mean, look at who, I mean, Husidic was very good when he was in MLS, you know, but when he came back, yeah, I always thought that he was a bit underrated.
Oh, yeah, and, for sure. He still is. Absolutely still is.
You know, you see throughout the season as he's progressed, I mean, it's one thing I love about MLS. Everyone improves. Yeah. I mean, like,
to be fair, though, Husidic is a shadow of his playing form in Chicago. Where in Chicago, he was different. I mean, different. Like, he was a midfielder there, different playing style, but he created chances and scored goals there, and he doesn't really do that as much here. He's more of the workhorse in the midfield, and that's why people hate him, because like people like the idea that Ishizaki is this great chance creator. But if you look at the numbers, Ishizaki just isn't creating enough chances to justify the amount of space he leaves behind him. That does lead me to a question. Do you think that this is, because we haven't seen Ishizaki in a while, why do you think that we might see Ishizaki in the second leg?
Possibly if the Galaxy are down because of that extra lift. Especially, I remember in the beginning of the season off the bench, he did provide a spark. So, and, you know, it would be good for Bruce to have, you know, it would be good to just have the option because, I mean, you got to imagine it. Jeff Kassar, you know, knows, okay, it's either going to be Gordon up top or, you know, the Ishizaki switch. So, I mean, like,
But sometimes we see Ishizaki come in earlier, and I was wondering in the last game, maybe, just maybe, because here's the thing about, you know, RSL. Like, RSL likes to overload the left. That's one of their trademarks. That's where Baggio is going to sit. So I thought, this is great. He'll just disrupt that. But then at the end of the day, RSL, doesn't matter who you put out there. You can put Jermaine Jones there. You know, people are just going to pass around them. It's RSL. They're going to move around you. You're a cone. You know, so maybe, just maybe, because of that, it doesn't matter if there's no one back there. I mean, if there doesn't matter, maybe we should have someone with higher positioning. Maybe we should have someone that's going to have the ability to whip in crosses or be better with set pieces. because we don't really need that workhorse in the midfield, because it's not like he's capable of winning that many balls against RSL.
Well, I'm just throwing this out there. Well, what about the idea of AJ man-marking Joao Plata? Because what I noticed throughout the game that he was very clever about was whenever he lined up with AJ, he always made sure that he was right around Omar. So that,
oh, yeah.
Every time he even just had possession, he went after him like a net. And, you know, you saw – I mean, RSL's a very – you know, I underestimated them a bit at the beginning of the year because they seemed like the quintessential, you know, dynasty team that, you know, got older and the coach get replaced and they, you know, slowly, like, erode. But, you know, in the beginning of the year, they just looked like they were just, you know, I guess chugging along. But, you know, they're a very dangerous team. And I forgot who mentioned it, but, you know, the fact that they're sort of they have that high pressure now. I mean, that's
Cazar's wrinkle. That's Cazar's new wrinkle in this team. And he even has Morales pressing, just impressive. If you get Morales to buy into this pressuring system, then like you're a coach, man. Like Cazar is a coach, a damn good coach.
All right. So one position we haven't talked about that I do want to make sure we hit upon is the goalkeeper. Jaime Pinedo got a lot of praise for this match. So was he as good as people have been saying, or you know, was it just maybe giving him too much credit for what went down?
I know nothing about goalkeepers, so I'll go first because Mike's analysis will be far better. But there were times in this game, especially in the beginning, where I thought, man, he's having a shaky game, and like there was that time when he tried to shepherd the ball out, and the ball wasn't going out. And it was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It reminded me of the situation when he let Papa take the ball from him, even though Papa fouled him. Everyone knows it. But when he let Papa take the ball from him, it's just like, you are being way too cavalier with, you know, coming out of the box. But at the same time, those saves were pretty unreal. Like, you cannot deny his reflexes. But I'll let Mike go into actual technique.
Well, I thought Pinedo was out of this world. I mean, probably his best performance of the season. And what really helped his game was when I critiqued him a couple of weeks ago, and even though he had kind of a bad game, it was more of a sort of a statement about his technique, because Matt Reese and Bruce Arena have referenced it throughout the year. But as good as Pinedo is as a keeper when it comes to his instincts, he lacks a little in the technique department. And against FC Dallas specifically, the problem he had was he would have balls coming in at, like, I would say a medium pace. And instead of, you know, playing the balls, you know, tipping them over the bar or perhaps catching them, he made two errors, which was one, instead of punching the ball confidently and getting it out of the 18, he only managed to really get – and it's funny because they both went to the exact same spot, which was the PK circle. But and second, you know, he wasn't able to stay on his feet, and he fell down. And the first time, you know, he escaped without punishment, but the second time he does it, it goes right to Castillo, and he heads into an empty net. And, you know, he had a couple of games where he wasn't playing that well, but against RSL, I mean, his performance was so complete. He had – one-on-one stops. He had tipping the ball over the bar. He had rebound reflex saves. He intercepted crosses. And, you know, the one play of his that I really loved was that Javi Morales cross. That, you know, now think about the dexterity it takes for a ball swinging in, with not only with the curve, but with the wind pushing it into the goal. You're mid-air, and you swing with one fist, and you just get it out of there. And, you know, almost as if to make the point, the ball bounced just right outside the 18-yard box. So I think the soccer gods were with me on that one. But, I mean, and the other save that I just really – it was just so gratifying was the one-on-one with Joao Plata. I mean – Cal Martino did a good job of describing how Plata sort of looked up, and then that's when Pinedo charged. But that book was, I mean, that save was textbooked. Perfect. I mean, the first one where, you know, Luis Gil has a really nice, just perfect bomb, and you see Jaime Pinedo, not only does he have the instincts correct to, you know, backpedal and jump, but, you know, barely tipping it over. I mean, he just had a perfect game.
I will say this about Pinedo, though. What's funny is, and I won't disagree that about any of your analysis, but I will say that it's funny how the stats, like, kind of tell, like, a different, like, story. Everyone's like, oh, San Pinedo. I mean, at the same time, at the end of the day, RSL's expected goals was 1.1. They scored zero. If you score zero goals off of 1.1 expected goals, that's about right. You're either going to score zero or one because it's right on that mark. So, yeah, he made some good saves, but it wasn't like he had to stand on his head to prevent shots that should have gone in.
Yeah, it was target practice. I mean, that's kind of, you know, going back to the theme that I believe is as bad and as unpleasant as it might have been for Galaxy viewers. You know, I don't think it was as bad as really fans made it out to be. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. I don't get how the fans were celebrating, like, or the media was, you know, celebrate as if RSL, they meant as if RSL won the game. I mean, they tied 0-0. I get the away rule, but I mean, if the Galaxy hit the first goal, they're going
to
win.
I mean, when it comes to LA RSL, all bets are off when it's an open game. So, and I think that's what's the most scary about this, because usually, and I'll say that we see a lot of teams that come into the StubHub Center and they play that low block, you know? And I don't think that they mean to do it. I think it's just the iron fist of LA's possession forces them back to a point that they have to play that sort of defense. But the thing about RSL is the LA will never do that to RSL. LA will never outpossess RSL to the degree of 55, 56, even 60%. It will always be even possession at best, because RSL is a better passing team. So when you have that, I mean, it takes away LA's ability to limit shots, and it also creates more opportunities for RSL. Most teams do not get that many, do not have enough possession to create that many chances against us. RSL will, and RSL is a type of team that it does not take much for them to score. They have one of the lowest goals to shots ratios in the league. They're known, I've read an article about this, like, they're known for, if you know anything about expected goals, you know, which is all about judging how a normal or an average player would score from a shooting position. RSL breaks math in this regard. They outperform their expected goals by huge margins, and they do it consistently. And I think they do it through tactics. But at the end of the day, they score goals from few shots. So it does not matter how much you limit them. They're always going to be dangerous.
So I did see one national reporter who was not impressed by the away goal mantra that everyone else seemed to be going into. But Grant Wall was definitely like, look, you guys, it's 0-0, and they're playing at the StubHub Center. Like, oh, LA has this. LA definitely has the
Strauss.
Advantage.
It was Brian Strauss who's been attacking it. And he got into a little argument with Grant, because Brian Strauss wrote an article about this at the beginning of the year about away goals being, you know, being bad, and I would agree with him. I think away goals are stupid. Away goals are stupid, and there's a reason why Europe hates away goals. And I think it's hilarious that MLS is like, we're moving to the European standard, and Europe is like, we need to get away from away goals. Because at the end of the day, you're arbitrarily deciding which goals count more than others. And there's an argument that encourages attacking soccer, but there's no evidence that that's true. Here's an example. The New England-Columbus Crew game. New England scores first. Columbus Crew, what do you do? You have to, I mean, it's in Columbus. New England has that away goal. Do you push forward or do you sit back? Because if you allow a second away goal, because if you push forward and you give them space to get that second away goal, boom, series is over. So, or essentially over. So what do you do? Because if you want attacking soccer, you want a model that allows Columbus to go forward. It doesn't necessarily do that. So, and in this game, this RSL game, look at the climate conditions we're going to have. Neither team had a good expected goals ratio in this match, you know, right? And it was windy. It was awful. Why should LA's ability to score in those conditions be judged the same as RSL's ability to score in like 70-degree LA weather? That's absurd, and it's arbitrary, and there's no reason why we should do it that way. I'm going to steal something that Matthew Doyle suggested, which is why don't we do the Liga MX thing, which is just tie goes to the team with the better record. Simple.
Speaking of our friend Matt Doyle, I just was, what was it, Jesse Marsh and someone else were doing a preview of the second leg, and he did this great Animal House skit, and then no one got it, and it was such a bummer. So, I mean, I saw Matt Doyle on Twitter just, how come no one got this? And I'm like, I agree. But, you know what? Liga MX, I mean, it's interesting.
Why not do it that way? Because, look, MLS is saying that they're doing it because they want to favor the home team, because supposedly in the attacking – because they want to cut down on what RSL did to us last year, which is bunker the first game. But, look, is it doing that? I mean, we're not going to have enough data for the next couple of years. But if you look at it in Europe, it doesn't do it in Europe. And honestly, it's also taking away excitement because it's limiting extra time. And extra time is so exciting in the playoffs. So why are we doing that? Why not make away goals be the decider before penalty kicks? So you go to extra time. If you can't decide in extra time, then do it. Then you go into away goals, and then if you're tied there, then you go to penalty kicks. Why are we moving to away goals when there's so much controversy around away goals? Why is Europe our standard here? I don't like it. I think it's stupid, and I think the league needs to reevaluate it.
All right, well, we do need to get some predictions in for what's going to happen on Sunday. Let's get some brass tacks. What do we think is going to happen out there?
Anyone got a coin? Like, I mean, Galaxy go through unless RSL... I mean, it's an easy thing to say, but if RSL scores first, I think they're going to get through. It's RSL can do so much to the Galaxy, even when the Galaxy are playing well. They're just that type of team. They're frustrating to analyze, and who knows? Like, we talked about this earlier. What's up with Keane? What's up with Donovan? What's going on there? Like, there's so much up in the air about this team right now. Are they gonna come out firing at all cylinders? Are they gonna be lackadaisical? I mean, coin flip. I'm just gonna say, out of my own bias, LA goes in, gets the result they need. Mike?
I say LA goes through either 2-1 or 1-0. It's going to be close. I do also worry about the fact that if RSL gets either an early goal or even more worryingly, some sort of 45th minute mistake, Leo isn't playing, so you don't have to worry about a plus one. But if they score first, I do worry about the idea of the Galaxy being able to score twice against that defense. Because they were in sync.
Here's the thing though, and again this is scary. Okay, let's say LA scores first. Okay, let's say they score 32nd, 34th minute, whatever. Okay, let's say they continue to push, gets to the 60th, 70th minute, it's 1-0. What do you do? Because if RSL scores, they win. So do you sit back and try to prevent that, or do you try to be proactive and get that next goal? Another thing I hate about away goals, it changes the tactical thinking of soccer in a completely unnatural way. This is not something you ever have to think about in the regular season, and it's not just natural to soccer. So it becomes a different game. Because who knows, do you go back, do you go forward? You have to weigh those consequences. I don't want our players having to think about that, nor do I want Bruce Arena to be in charge of the decision, quite frankly. And, I mean, what do you do in that situation? Do you sit back against RSL? Do you Bruce Arena classic Park the Bus, or do you go for it, as the Galaxy always seem to do?
But LA has to literally score twice in that situation. Like, that's the only... They can't rely on any sort of draw situation.
Well, that's my point. So
if RSL gets the first, it's two goals or bust.
Right, but my point is, what if LA scores first and it gets to that 60th or 70th minute? What do you do? Do you try to defend that one goal, or do you go for the second? Because actually the doomsday scenario is that LA's gets to the 80th minute up 1-0 and RSL's pushing people forward. And it's like, what are we trying to do to stop this? Because if RSL scores that goal, 80th minute, 1-1, they're going to go through. You have 10 minutes to get you have 10 minutes to change it. So the worst that can happen is a late equalizer, because you don't have much time to reverse things. So how do you prevent that? Do you bunker, or do you try to get the second goal so they have to score again, or so they have to score twice?
I think the Galaxy defense is good enough that as long as they don't bunker, they should be able to handle anything RSL can throw at them. I mean, as good as Joel Plata is, you know, how many clear-cut chances did RSL have? And that's on their home field. I mean, I keep bringing up the wind, but, you know, there were a couple of plays in the second half, you know, clever little kips, you know, that were going like 20 yards. And they're definitely in the final third of the field. And you're seeing yourself, how are these staying in play? I mean, they know how to play on that field. Like I said, their game plan changed dramatically the second they realized they were playing into the wind. And for the most part, you know, that's what RSL does. They don't create a ton of easy chances. What they do is they kind of carve you out in a mini FC Barcelona light type of way, and then slowly but surely they wear you down, and then they get a half chance and score.
Right.
But luckily for the Galaxy, Pinedo was there for every half chance. So.
But what's scary about it is that, I mean, RSL has an expected goals for 1.29. Their average goals much higher than that. I don't have the stat on me, but it's much higher than that. They outperform. They only shoot like 13 shots a game, but they get way more goals from those 13 shots than most teams are able to do it from. And they're not shooting from advantageous positions either. They're just scoring. And it's a lot of that has to do with, I think, because they overload the side and then switch it back, so they're getting more open shots. But it doesn't take much for them. It's for whatever reason, math doesn't apply. So it's sort of like irrationally irrational fear. All it takes is Plata on Omar. And, you know, Omar slips up, as he's prone to do sometimes. Plata gets there, he scores the goal. And then, you know, 80th minute, it's 1-1 again. RSL's going to go through unless he score. It's not a team that we can smother. RSL is always going to be dangerous against the Galaxy. They can always nick a goal from relatively nothing, no matter how well the Galaxy defense plays. And that's why I kind of say, where's my coin for this coin flip? It's scary. And the away goals rule amplifies it. Because if this were winner take all, as it should be, then fine. Galaxy go through, no problem. Matter of fact, I would say almost... I would give RSL chances of going through without the away goals rule 20%, honestly. I would say it's like 40, 45 with the away goals rule, because they don't need to win. And at the end of the day, they're fully capable of getting a scoring tie.
Well, I do not think that you could accuse us of any sort of bias. I think that was a very thorough and quite accurate breakdown of what we think might happen on Sunday. If you want to see a bias prediction, I think LA is going to win 4-0 and Robbie Keane's going to have a hat trick. So, you know, whatever. And, I don't know. I think this went quite well. How do you guys feel?
I think it did. And probably right now you're probably hearing some music, some edited music, you know, sort of playing us off. Now, hopefully it's a certain song from a certain Tom Cruise plane movie. But if it's not, that means that, Kenny Loggins denied or ignored our request. So if you're listening, buddy, just, you know, pick up the phone, let us use the song, man, because you know it. You know how awesome it would be.
Return
Please don't sue us.
Alive.
Yeah, answer our Twitters. You know, we want this song, man. We'll do what it takes.
Please don't sue us. Please don't sue us. Okay. I think that's going to be it for us. I'm going to say my goodbyes. I've been Josie Becker. You can find me on Twitter at Josie Becker FC. You can find Sean at Sean Steffen on Twitter. You can find Mike Gray at Mike Gray SC on Twitter. Follow us all. We'll have a lot to say about this match.
And the LA, and our, don't forget our own Twitter feed.
That's right. We do have a Twitter. LAG Confidential is how that goes. And be sure to check out the website. Of course, you're already there because you're listening to the podcast. So, yeah. Anyone have any final thoughts?
Look, hopefully we'll be bringing you some extra special video after the RSL, hopefully, victory. And we're going to try to amp up our media presence during the playoffs. So look out for that.
Yeah, I guess we're signing off. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a good weekend. Hope to see you guys at the stadium.